Chapter 7. The Sacrifice of the Heavenly Man. And he went out, bearing his cross, to the place called the Place of the Skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha. There they crucified him, and with him two others, one on either side, and Jesus between them. Pilate also wrote a title and put it on the cross. It read, Jesus the Nazarene, the King of the Jews. John 19:17-19.
What is the cross of Jesus for the person who wants to go the path of the rose and the cross? If this question were put to various candidates, would the answer be the same? Would they testify of a clear insight experienced from within? There are reasons to doubt this. Jesus Christ often put such questions to his pupils, and the answers showed how much their insight was broken and divided. When one has difficulties with another person, one sighs, "What a cross I have to bear," and tears flow in self-pity. When the passionate urges of the eye are thwarted in some way or other, one mystifies one's experiences as a way of the cross. Others spread their arms and say, "Look I at me, am the cross, and I will propel this cross to victory. I have the power to do so, for aren't there latent within me the seven potentialities, the seven power centers, the seven endocrine glands? See, I put them around the heart of the cross like seven roses, and I will make them flower and give off fragrance like precious nard, and thus I will celebrate my resurrection. Brothers and sisters, do as I do, may the roses flower on your cross." Then there are those who tell how Jesus Christ, by his blood sacrifice for world and mankind, purified and sanctified the sphere of the planetary cosmos, and how we can now ascend the path upwards because of this process of salvation. This view is close to that of our Orthodox brothers and sisters, who adapt their lives to the belief that Christ has delivered us from our sins and has paid for them, that he has arranged an eternal bliss for us, and that we can entrust ourselves completely to his heart of love. The Orthodox brother sticks to his church or his Bible, and the esoteric brother to his spiritual school, his sense centers, and his hormone-producing organs. The cross is understood in many ways, romantically, symbolically, esoterically, and literally. In accordance with your inclinations, you seek contact during the years with certain aspects in order to drug yourself, and so your life passes away to end as it began. Therefore, it is now without sense to ask, what is the cross of Jesus for the pupil of the rosy cross? Something essential must exist in the multiplicity of aspects of the cross. There must be an essence, a certainty. Of what use is the edifying, the mystical, the romantic, the speculative? It satisfies for a moment, it gives a brief stimulus, a mood, and that is all. We need something else in a raging, desperate world. You should no longer drug yourself with moods. That is an abuse of civilization. It is the whitewashing of a grave full of lies and corruption. The pupil must grasp a reality and live in this reality from day to day. Then he will surmount the moods and speculations. Then the facts of salvation will become focal points in his life and will no longer be moments of mystical climax to which he exalts meditatively. When you take the Bible to read about Good Friday and the meaning of the events on Golgotha, you do not yet testify from your own being. You do not allow the Bible to speak from your heart's blood, but view it with an esoteric magnifying glass. You want to rob the universal doctrine of the secret of life. If we ask you, what is the cross of Jesus to you? It can be discerned clearly from your answer whether you speak from an inner possession or whether you are repeating the words of the Bible with an idea distilled from it. Those who possess the inner treasure understand one another and know themselves to be participants in the great brotherhood of mankind, which is not of this world. They experience Good Friday in a daily rendering of service and the events of Golgotha as an inner process. This is what we want to discuss, not with the intention of enlarging your wealth of ideas, for you are not in need of that, but if possible, to make you conscious of yourself. It can happen that one word can open a door for your consciousness and cause you to see and to recognize. This is our purpose, and to everyone who can understand our words only as another idea, another view, we give the advice, free yourself of it, because for you it is useless, just ballast. An inscription was put on the cross, Jesus the Nazarene, King of the Jews. What does this mean? Perhaps you will think of the historical figure of Jesus the Christ, who breaks into time for the salvation of man. But Jesus the Nazarene is certainly not only the historical Christ figure. The Gospels are not only historical accounts or lists of dates. They are processes, methods of entrance of Jesus into man. If you could understand the Gospels in this way, they could be very liberating for you. The inscription Jesus the Nazarene draws attention to a liberating, redeeming ray of the universal Christ consciousness that should have an abode in the pupil. This is why the inscription also mentions King of the Jews. So we read the liberating, redeeming aspect of the royal lion. The Gospel does not want to make you understand what happened to the historical Jesus Christ, but how something of the universal Christ being can flow into you for your eternal salvation. Thus, we do not engage in a drama of 2,000 years ago, but place this fact of salvation before us and adjust to a Good Friday in the present. Let people stare themselves to death at the uncomprehended past. We want the present. When the pupil goes the path of the Christ mysteries, a moment arrives when, beside his dialectical personality, the heavenly, true personality comes into being in the microcosmic life field. This is the beginning of the entrance of Jesus into his respiration field, the birth. At first, he is helpless and wrapped in linen. The black enemy seeks to kill him, but if the pupil can withstand the dangers that threaten, a moment will come that for him, too, the words are fulfilled. And he, the heavenly man, went out, bearing his cross to the place of the skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha. Jesus, the Nazarene, the heavenly man, the original one as intended by God, one branch of the hierarchical tree of life, one newly grown shoot of the cut-off stump of Jesse, approaches from the respiration field, the dialectical personality not intended by God, to allow himself to be taken prisoner, beginning at the head sanctuary, the place of the skull. There they crucified him, and with him two others, one on either side, and Jesus between them. To understand the meaning and purpose of this threefold crucifixion, you need to be enlightened by the universal doctrine which corresponds with your remembrance. When, in the grey mists of the past, man broke the laws of God and so lost his binding with the divine order, he lost at the same time his threefold heavenly form, as if in a terrible explosion. In the divine order, sinfulness and anything counternatural cannot grow rampant like a cancer. Everything that is not light and goes against the law of the light will explode, will be crushed and decomposed. The world of the divine order maintains itself in this way, and everything that does not relate harmoniously to it shoots down like a meteor, like a fiery flame. When this catastrophe hit us, only the central spirit nucleus existed. We, the branches of the tree of life, were cut off and burned. Yet the central spirit nucleus in the original substance has to manifest itself and possess a threefold instrument. Therefore, after the fall, after the light figure was emptied, laboriously, man had to build again a threefold form, though not now as intended by the light, but according to the antithesis of the light, in dialectics. So we are imprisoned in a threefold figure that is, in no respect, that of the original man. Yet this form we cherish is also partly an eternal form, but one at which death gnaws. A part of us dies and the wheel goes on. What has died is replaced by what we receive from our parents, only to perish again. You are acquainted with this life, with its imperfection, decay, and hopelessness. Youth still longs for the future, but this longing grows dull until one day there is no longing left for this journey through hell. We are imprisoned in time, ceaselessly revolving like an eternal wheel. Thank God there is the divine intervention and the Holy Spirit of the universe. The Christ hierarchy, which descends from the immovable kingdom, tells us how we can be saved from our fallen state. The law of salvation culminates in preparing to take up the cross and carry it to the place of the skull. This process, leading to a glorious resurrection, has been demonstrated and endured by one, and after him, many were able to experience the crown of victory, following in his footsteps. Those who want to go the path of transfiguration are invited to follow the same Via Dolorosa. What kind of process is this? A new shoot must grow on the stump of Jesse. On the basis of remembrance, the central spirit nucleus must bring the original man to reconstruction, to rebirth. He does so out of water and spirit. This is the grace of God that really does surpass all understanding. This is the love of God, which extends to us in our journey through hell, the root substance of the tree of life, of the immovable kingdom. In this way, we will be able to prepare the threefold heavenly form in our microcosm, so a moment arrives that has been beheld by many seers, understood or misunderstood, in which two beings emanate from one and the same central spirit nucleus. The heavenly and the dialectical man go through life as Gemini, as a pair of twins, with a tightly drawn bow aimed at the stars of the land of the light. Yet this is not the way of the cross. It comes at a psychological moment when the preparations are complete. Then the two so opposite beings are tied together, beginning at the place of the skull, at the head sanctuary, the seat of the mind. The heavenly man offers himself as prisoner to the dialectical man. Why? To lead him again and now for the last time to his death, not partly, but totally. The heavenly man who is not of this world is built within the dialectical man in three processes, in 3 days, beginning on Good Friday and ending on Sunday, the day of days, the morning of the resurrection. The end is the disappearance of everything dialectical and the resurrection of the true man, the return to the immovable kingdom. They crucified him, and with him, two others, one on either side and Jesus between them. When Jesus the Nazarene has entered the pupil, the devil in him, the blackness that lives in him, the ungodly and biological, the insanity of the world of delusion must first of all be killed. Secondly, the seeking, toiling man in him dies, the seeker after light, the homesick man who longs passionately for liberation. He dies in the certainty of the light that enters him. The light embraces him with its great love. He is as one dying, rejoicing with him in paradise. Jesus the Nazarene, King of the Jews, has become one with him.